This is Andrew Kate.
And this is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast. In this week's episode, John Cho goes searching for his daughter through the internet, and Lenny Abramson takes on British Gothic horror with The Little Stranger.
And we're going to start with Lenny Abramson's third feature film, I believe, with The Little Stranger. And despite the fact that I actually kind of enjoyed this movie, you can tell we're really into the doldrums of August. I mean, Labor Day is just a complete dead zone for movie releases. And it's a shame that a movie like this is just going to kind of get dumped into the multiplexes to be forgotten. I think it only made like $450,000 over the weekend, which is just, how does that even show up on people's radars? I'm surprised there were people in my theater in the first place. But it's a little unfair because I think Lenny Abramson is a very thoughtful filmmaker, even when he's handling material that very clearly had studio hands in it. And I know this is based off of a book that, unlike his previous film, Room, was not written by the author of the novel. So it's going to be a little bit trickier trying to navigate this material, still being true to the source, while trying to put his own spin on it. And I think you find some pretty good drama within here, even if it's a little shortchanged on the horror end in favor of more of an atmosphere and discomfort. Basically centers around Domhnall Gleeson as this doctor in just after the Great War, I believe, who is called to this mansion at which he attended a party. It's this very big, ornate mansion. You got Charlotte Rampling, Ruth Wilson, and Will Poulter are this really strange family that you never can really tell what's going on with them, other than the fact that they have somehow fallen from their social stature to some degree. And also Will Poulter's, disfigured character suffering from PTSD at the early stages of even knowing what, quote, war shock was. And I think Will Poulter is really, I'll just mention this now, his soldier is really just in the wrong movie. He delivers his lines with this, I guess he's going for camp, but it just kind of comes across as cheesy, and I don't really mean that in a good way. But I think everyone else kind of nails the right tone in here, particularly Gleason. I mean, the guy is a very good actor to begin with, and he gives this doctor, we're seeing this world through his eyes, and as that is gradually revealed, and, as the pieces kind of come together, literally right at the very end, in the very last shot of the movie, I was happy with the end result. I think that they kind of played off of it well, and they really gave an interesting enough, for me at least, character study of this doctor and, his on-again, off-again relationship with this, the daughter played by Ruth Wilson. And it's good, and it's creepy enough, and it is interesting enough. And I don't want to sound it like that I'm damning it with faint praise, but I do think the film, I'll freely admit that I was expecting a different movie coming into this. I was expecting something more of a straight horror ghost story, even if this was entertaining and even if it did have other things on its agenda. It was entertaining enough for me, and for Labor Day weekend, is that really the best you can ask for?
Yeah, it's interesting because, Lenny Abramson is a great filmmaker, and I believe he's made more than three features. Just the three are the sort of most well-known, but I guess he's made some before that. For those of you who don't know a bit of his, previous films, obviously Ryan mentioned Room, a very intimately and emotional film, but he also previously made sort of the wackily comedic, yet really powerful, emotionally powerful as well, Frank, starring Michael Fassbender, and I definitely recommend that film as it has a really weird energy. An absolutely dynamite performance from Michael Fassbender. But it's interesting just to see him just sort of tackle these different things. And obviously he's tackling a more quiet sort of gothic horror here with A Little Stranger. And I have to say, like, the first half of the film really did to me at times feel a bit directionless, where I was enjoying Domhnall Gleeson's performance. I think that's definitely the strength of the film. I like it's sort of an intensely quiet film. You never really know exactly why he's acting the way he is. And I actually kind of enjoy that dynamic, but I feel like that gets sort of a bit lost in the first half because I feel like it's hard for the audience to know what the film, what the story is about, what we're supposed to be focusing on. You mentioned Will Poulter, who definitely is, laying it on a bit thick, but to me, like, I was very shocked that he was such a minor part of the movie, where it felt like there was an interesting dynamic there, and I thought he was going to come back in a big way, and he does come back, but just barely, just sort of as a throwaway thing. So that was weird to me. It felt like he was a bigger part of the story, and then he just sort of gets sort of pushed aside, and then more of the focus gets put on Domhnall Gleeson and his relationship with Ruth Wilson, Will Poulter's sister in the movie. I just thought the first half, like, it felt like I really enjoy ambiguity in films, and so I'm definitely much more willing to go with a film, and I definitely was, particularly in the second half of the film, and with that ending, which I feel like does make it clear what happened, but I feel like some audiences are not going to pick up on that or whatever, and that's something I admire about Lenny Abramson, that he's willing to go down that road and leave it a bit open, although I think it's very clear what happened throughout the movie and just based on Donald Gleason's performance, what he's trying to portray. But to me, it just felt like a bit like in the first half, like the film just waited a bit too long to get to some of the eerie and creepy stuff about the house. Obviously, we have this sequence with the dog, which we won't get too much into, but then, you know, people obviously, you know, much like horror films, although this doesn't, as you mentioned, doesn't really function like a traditional horror, much more methodical and slow pace, but people start to become victims of this entity, which we don't know what it is, and obviously it's revealed at the end, which I won't reveal, you know, what it is, but it really depends on you, the audience member, what you take away from the film. But I do feel like the strength of the film really does lie on Domhnall Gleeson's performance, and I feel like just letting him sit there in these quiet moments, it really conveys his story. I just wish some of the other characters would have been given a bit more, and I feel like that would have benefited the film and made it a bit more interesting because of that.
You know, it's the damnedest thing as we're sitting here talking about this movie and I'm kind of replaying. You know, you mentioned the first hour is kind of turgid in a way. And it is. I mean, it's a very methodical, slow-paced film. But now that I'm thinking about it in the context of the big reveal at the end, I still like and I'll still defend the ending. But it does. There are a couple of lapses of logic very early on, particularly with the sequence and the dog leading up to what the outcome for the dog is. That scene that puts that dog in that situation in the first place doesn't make a lick of sense when you put it in that context. And I know you're nodding now. Like,
how's the realization it was, right now? Yes.
Like what? All right. So yeah, that's kind of like a big old floppy penis of a plot hole sticking out in the middle of a screen. That's pretty. I mean, beyond that, I mean, there's really not too much for me to pick on. And I will say, I want to get into a mild spoiler, but you got to be honest with yourself. You don't even know what movie we're talking about right now. So the scene in the trailer where Will Poulter is, you know, he's in the library and it's on fire and he's freaking out and it's implied that he's either being haunted or he's having some kind of... all right, the trailer plays it off. Is he being haunted or is it some kind of PTSD thing? In the film, it's revealed that he actually set the library on fire himself. And again, that doesn't... there's like a will there or won't they thing with the supernatural element that is a little, that can be a little off-putting and a little misleading. But I don't know, I just keep coming back to the idea of like when they get to that final shot, I'm like, oh, okay, that works. And it's not something that I saw coming. I wasn't really in the right frame of mind to be sitting there guessing the ending of a movie anyway. But it worked well enough for me, and there really weren't too many logical conclusions aside from this. So it's just the one thing that could have worked without getting incredibly stupid. But honestly, there's really, I mean, you might, if you see it on Sunday TV in the middle of, and there's not a good football game on or whatever, throw it on. You could do worse, but there's plenty of other stuff I would recommend well beforehand.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I did see the ending coming, but I feel like, you know, this is like, you know, I'm into horror, and obviously this is a bit different, more methodically slow-paced horror, but I was pretty convinced I knew what was going on, at least I would say how, I mean, obviously once it gets in the second half and you sort of see the actions of certain characters, I felt like, oh, I'm pretty sure, and just some of the editing and certain sequences towards the end, I feel like, oh, well, I feel like it's very clear what's happening here, and I admire that great sort of editing and direction there where he sort of does mislead the audience in certain levels, but to me, I always felt like I knew what was happening. And but that doesn't really, I don't say that to take away from the ending, because like I was surprised at how still, like, I think it's clear, but it won't be clear to everyone, as I said, what happens here. So I was surprised that he left it on a bit of an ambiguous note, but some of the shots at the end definitely make it sort of very clear the journey of Gleason's character and sort of what in particular was going on in the film. But you know, I definitely enjoyed the film. But, you know, I probably wouldn't say I liked it as much as you, but I would say I liked it. But of the three Lenny Abramson films I've seen, it's definitely my least favorite, but I still, it's still, you know, based on, you know, as you alluded to, the type of movies we're getting around this time of year, I think it's definitely sort of understandable with that. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, but now I'll transition into our second film, Searching, which Ryan unfortunately wasn't able to see, but I was, and I have to say, as I told to Ryan before we started recording this, this movie was magical. I know that sounds crazy coming from me and like some of the intense negativity we've had sort of on this podcast, but it's interesting to note that, you know, Searching once again uses the concept that we talked about with Unfriended Dark Web, where the entire movie essentially takes place sort of on various technology or computer screens. And this film is definitely the best use of the concept to date. This is an award winner at Sundance, and it got a lot of hype from that. So I was really excited to see the movie, but I was kind of blown away with some of the execution and the actual beauty of this film and some of the shots. You know, it really is a film with a unique beauty all its own, and I'll do my best to describe at least a bit what that means. You know, throughout the film, with just one click or drag of a mouse, you know, an array of motions can hit you just like that because of the story content of this film. You know, unlike Unfriended and obviously the sequel, which we saw a few months back, you know, these are films that are using the concept, but they're not using them for more than one emotion. They're really using it for one in particular, and that is horror and terror. And this film, it utilizes sort of all the elements, and sort of the element that brings them all sort of to the center is John Cho's really fantastic performance. I've always liked him as an actor, but I've never seen him give quite an emotional performance like this, although I didn't see that movie Columbus that he starred in that was supposed to be at least somewhat emotional, I don't know, in the past couple years. But he's really compelling and displays a wide array of emotions and really hits home his desperation at this point. But essentially, for those of you that don't know, the story centers around John Cho, who's the father, who essentially his daughter goes missing, and then he teams up with this detective played by Deborah Messing to find his daughter. And essentially, as I said, it takes place through various computer screens and stuff, but it's done in a way that is unlike anything you've ever seen. Like, you know, there's moments where the screensaver just pops up and it's just this green, you know, it's screensaver you've seen before, but it's just like this black image and there's this green shape that's moving in different various shapes. But they use the screensaver, like it's almost like it hits you at the perfect time. Like John Cho has just had an emotional moment and then just cut to the screensaver, and it's just essentially doing this to show, you know, John Cho's sleeping, the screensaver's on, and then up in the right corner of the screen, it's like flashing a call from, you know, his daughter in the middle of the night, and this sort of is the, like, right after that is when she goes missing. And there's many of these moments where it's just like a screen or an image hits the computer and you're just like really transported. You know, there's this backstory where essentially the mother isn't, you know, John Cho's wife isn't a factor in this story, and man, do they use her, whether even though she's not even a character in the movie, they use her properly, because the computer has three different users. We have John Cho, the dad, we have the daughter who goes missing, and then the wife. And John Cho, eventually, he's so desperate, he has to click on his wife's icon, and that, like, just based on how they set up, you know, there's this amazing opening montage of just images of that set up the entire backstory of this relationship, and what happened to the mother, etc. But just the unique power. I've never seen, like, film do this before. This is a new format that I'm actually excited about, because a film is utilizing this new form of technology to really be expressive and emotional. And I'll be honest, there were multiple times during this movie where I got a bit emotional, and I mean, it's just a credit to the power of this film. Like, I didn't know that, you know, I mean, I liked the first Unfriended just fine. Obviously, I wasn't a big fan of the second one, but I didn't know that you could make a film with this technology and have it be as effective emotionally as this film is. But just like I said, with a simple click or drag in a mouse, it provides you with this immense power that is just so unexpected, because you've never seen anything like this. And I've never been more encouraged for films to use this concept going forward, although obviously this filmmaker really used it completely to a T. But what's also interesting about this film, unlike the Unfriended films, is that you completely buy into how the various forms of technology are utilized. I was incredibly impressed with this film, how there was always some sort of logic in terms of why this camera was on. Like I said, they used a screensaver, and then in the screensaver there's like a reflection of John Cho sleeping on his bed or something. It's like unbelievable the way they do this, and you sort of use it throughout the film. But there's always a context to each form of technology. Like at a certain point, there's like sort of this like a funeral website where you go on and you're able to watch like a ceremony online. They use that in one of the most powerful shots I honestly of the year. Like there's like this really powerful, and there are some twists and turns to this movie that I can say I did not see coming or whatever. Some really interesting dynamics. They play with the idea that you know, as I said, they utilize all this technology well, but they also introduce aspects that really hit home that would totally happen in contemporary society, where people are like, oh, the dad did it, the daughter's missing or whatever, and there's people posting YouTube comments and stuff. Like, they use all of these aspects of technology, but it really is a great great reflection, I think. Well, I mean, a great, I should say, a fitting reflection of society, not necessarily showing the greatness of humanity, but showing how people would actually react. And I thought that was such an intelligent way of doing it. Like, there's a moment where John Cho is searching for his daughter, and he's essentially going through all her stuff online. He's trying to get in contact with a friend to figure out where she's gone. And at one point, he gets in contact with this girl who's, like, part of her study group. And she's like, to be honest, I didn't really know her that well. We were friends. And then when the news story breaks that she is missing, they jump to a YouTube video, and it's this girl, and she's like crying. She's like, oh my god, she's my best friend. And I just thought it was brilliant. It is just like the such effective use of all these realms of technology. And honestly, I couldn't believe, like, I was excited for the movie, but I didn't expect to be so completely transported and blown away by its use of it. And I just thought it easily the most effective use of this single screen concept. And honestly, I can't wait to see what other filmmakers do with this film. Sort of with that being said, I mean, I can talk a bit more. I mean, there's, as I mentioned, a number of images that not only invoke certain emotions from you, but, you know, are really chilling at certain points. And safe to say, you know, this is a film that I really wanted to talk about on here because I really want people to go see this movie. And thankfully, it's doing a bit of good business, at least on the indie realm. It sort of made a few million dollars. So, hey, good for this movie, you know, because it definitely deserves it. But, you know, this is, you know, people say, you know, oh, this certain technology is the way of the future. Well, I mean, this is definitely going to be, I wouldn't say, obviously, it's not going to be the way of the future for all film, but it's going to be another trend, much like found footage was for the horror genre. This, you know, this film isn't necessarily horror. It's more of just more of a thriller, and I would say emotionally powerful drama at that, which was sort of unexpected. But I just have to say, I cannot recommend this film searching more highly, and I greatly, greatly encourage you to seek this film out, because I'm going to say it's not going to be for everyone, certainly not, but if you appreciate film and just want to see a different format and a way of evoking emotions in an audience, you can do a lot worse than this film, because I'll be honest, it's definitely one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, I'm really sick of being broke all the time and never being able to afford certain movies that I really, really want to see. And this was unfortunately one that just eluded me for financial reasons. I will, I get paid on Friday, so I'll probably just go see it on Saturday. But anyway, with that, we can turn our attention to a couple weeks from now. And we say a couple because Andrew will be going to the Toronto International Film Festival for God only knows how many times now, you lucky bastard. I guess in a couple weeks, we're going to be tackling Shane Black's take on The Predator, as well as The Darker Side of Paul Feig, according to the trailer and whatever that movie is called. A Simple Favor. Thank you. But we're also going to be starting a new series, and this is just a random idea that popped in my head. It might just be a callous ploy to get more likes and shares and listens on this podcast in the first place, but it is something that I've been wanting to do since I was, oh God, maybe 12, 13 years old. So every single week, in addition to the two movies that we'll be seeing in the theater, we're also going to be tackling, starting all the way back in 1927, every Best Picture winner that ever existed, actually. So we're going to start with Wings. These first 10 weeks are just going to be a chore. But it's something that's just going to be fun. It's going to be, especially considering all the poo-pooing of the Academy lately, I kind of just want to go back to the source and see the evolution of the Oscars in general. And, you know, in some ways, kind of getting an evolution of cinema in general. And, you know, kind of getting an evolution of the ideas and the zeitgeists of each individual time. And, you know, thankfully, I don't have to sit through Crash again until 2 years from now. But it is something that I am looking forward to doing. And Andrew was stupid enough to agree to it. So, unfortunately, he's locked in now.
Well, I'm looking forward to it just because, I mean, it's sort of like some of our listeners, it'll give you some history, you know, behind it. And some, obviously, there's a number of these films I've never seen before, so I'm excited to just go and sort of see, you know, what these films are like. And, you know, obviously, you know, we're going to be focused mostly on Best Pictures, but if any of us, if we have seen any of the other nominations, sometimes we may give a preference for another film over the other or things like that. But I think it's just going to be really fun just sort of going through, giving a sort of a film history lesson along with our insane thoughts on a weekly basis about the films coming out. But I'm really excited for that. I think it's a great idea that Ryan came up with. But obviously, Ryan alluded to the fact I am going off to the Toronto International Film Festival, leaving just tomorrow morning, Thursday morning after this is posted, and I'll be checking out a variety of films, and I'll be sharing some of my thoughts. Obviously, I won't be going in depth because a lot of these films we'll be doing on the podcast, you know, in the coming months, but I'll be seeing things like The New Halloween, Steve McQueen's Widows, Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight, If Beale Street Could Talk. I'm seeing also Jonah Hill's debut with mid-90s, Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, which is, you know, as seems to be like everyone's hailing it as a masterpiece, his best film. This seems to be one of the big contenders. And I'm not saying this to brag. Ryan's just shaking his head. He's so depressed that I'm bragging right now. But I just wanted to give you guys a tease of at least some of the films. I'll at least be giving sort of a brief, you know, comments on, but I won't be going crazy in depth. And I also decided, I forgot to tell Ryan this, but I'll share it on the podcast. I've decided that throughout my time at TIFF, I'm going to try, and if there's any weird things that happen, crazy things, I'm going to post it through our Death of Cinema social media. So I'll try and do it both on Facebook and Twitter. So copy and paste. So it's on both. So look out for those. Hopefully I have some crazy stories to tell and people, weird celebrities I bump into, we can only hope, and just weird experiences altogether. But obviously, as Ryan said, we'll be back with The Predator and A Simple Favor in a couple weeks, unless something better comes along.
As always, God help you, and thank you for listening to us.